Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Patrick Harrington from Mildly Geeky in Boston.
And today we have on Paulo Elias from No Longer IDEO?
No Longer IDEO.
Welcome, Paulo. So this is actually why we wanted to have you on. So we wanted to talk to you about what it's like to interview for a web dev job in 2020. Right?
Yes.
So if you were out in La Fortuna in Costa Rica and you were hiking up the side of the volcano Cerro Chato and someone walked up next to you and they said, hey, what's it like to interview for a web dev job in 2020? Like, what would you tell them?
Bring a bottle of rum.
A bottle of rum. Oh. That's always welcome down there. Yeah.
It's very interesting, that's for sure.
You got to be pithy because they're howler monkeys that are up there and they're yelling at you and they're the kind that fling feces if they want you out of their territory. So I'm not even kidding. So what would you say, Paulo?
I would say start practicing your algorithms and esoteric JavaScript knowledge.
For real?
It's weird. Yeah. It's a very interesting sort of path to navigate, I guess is the best way to put it.
You know, I've had this sneaking suspicion, and I think that I'm correct, that there are lots of jobs in this business that I would apply for and I would fail to get the job. Like they would turn me down hard, but yeah. I would do amazing at those jobs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the whole part of that situation is really sort of interesting and intriguing. Mm. It's in my case, I've been focusing on basically one product and using React for, 4.5-5 years. And then these companies expect you to come in and do things their way. Mm. But they don't tell you what to prepare for or how to prepare. Sometimes if you ask the right question, you can sort of get a hint of you're going to be building some sort of type-ahead component or something like that. But I actually just got back from an on-site and that was one of the components they said I was going to be building. And it wasn't one of the ones I was going to be building. Mm.
Well, okay. So it has to depend on a couple of factors, right? So it has to depend, one, on the size of the company that you're looking to apply to. Because I would think that your average agency or your average small company, small defined as less than 50 employees, they're not going to be interviewing you about algorithm stuff. I would be surprised that they would for a web development job. Am I wrong? And is it?
Well, that's the funny thing, because there's I've interviewed since I started looking at looking at the beginning of January, a small startup and then a larger sort of fintech company in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Even the small startup is first question off the bat was this algorithm I'd never seen before. So that was interesting. And sort of, the other thing too is especially startups in San Francisco expect you to be full stack regardless of.
Which I think is a meaning. I think is an utterly, utterly meaningless term and it triggers me. So, okay.
It does. It does me too, but they also take it very seriously. Uh-huh. And you are sort of, move on in the process if you can't demonstrate that you can do 73 million things.
So here's what would happen, Paulo. I go in for that interview and they would be like, are you a full stack developer? And I'd be like, that's not a thing. Like that doesn't exist. And then they'd be like, okay, you can leave now. I'm like, okay, see you later.
Meanwhile, they dug in and they're like, okay, you can do server administration. You can write a transcoder API. You get it, you just hate the term.
Yeah, but the best part about this job is it was a front end focused full stack developer.
Okay.
Who they still haven't hired for because they're looking for some unicorn. Mm. But everyone I talked to is we need someone to focus on the front end. We need someone with this experience. And it's all the experience I had. But at the end of the day, I didn't move on because I wasn't full stack enough.
Huh.
See, which was really interesting to me because I've never been in a position where I was told I like wasn't technical enough for a job, even though what we spoke about in the interview and what we, you know, what's on my resume and the projects I worked on were directly related to what they were doing. So, but that also just goes to show you if you have any sort of, it seems like if you struggle any bit on just getting the algorithm, they completely just put a black X on you.
See, I've done, you know, I've said this many times on here, Patrick is sick of it, but I've done everything from like assembly to C to Swift and PHP and JavaScript and like a whole bunch of wide range of this stuff. But if they start asking me about, you know, specific algorithm implementations, even if it was something that I had done many times before, I might not even recognize like the technical name that it's called by. And,
exactly.
And I don't know if I would be able to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the funny thing, especially as I've been like grinding, studying the algorithm. It's like, oh, I've done this before.
Right.
But it's the way the questions are asked and worded. It has really nothing to do with the context of like what you would do in a job.
Okay. Well, so I'm curious. So I think that I would fail utterly, but let's reverse the roles. You are now the interviewer at this job that you weren't full stack enough. You're interviewing me for the job. I sit down. All right, Mr. Interviewer, I'm ready. What do you need to know?
Well, so they put you in there at the conference room and the first, for some reason, the first sort of question is, at least the two times I've done the on-site, it's the first question is always the algorithm.
All right.
So it's like, okay, can you...
Hit me with the puppy. Go ahead.
Can you... So one of them was, in hindsight, it was actually really easy, which is taking an array of sorted numbers.
What language?
I'm using JavaScript.
Okay.
So you take an array of sorted numbers and print out the ranges as strings. So if it's like 1, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, you print out 1, and I forgot the numbers. I said 3, 4, 5, 3-5, 7-8, and 10 in a string.
I see. Okay.
Which is, it's actually when you sit down and figure it out, it's not that difficult, but it's also someone for me who doesn't interview with jobs a lot. It was like really intimidating to sit down there like, what? I've never seen this before in my life.
So wait, just so I understand it. So we've got an array of numbers. So is there, why would there be more than one range? Wouldn't you just range it from the smallest one to the biggest one, or they want?
So like, you have to range the consecutive numbers.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Mm. So 3 to 3, 4, 5 would be 3-5.
Got it.
It's manipulating an array of things, which at the end of the day, we do quite a bit when we're spitting stuff out from a database.
So I would do this sort of the way that you do like run length and coding, where you just, you know, you iterate through it and you've got a mode about, you know, whether you're accumulating or not, and just kind of toggle between those as you, you know, do that with array dot. Not reduce, but
actually you don't even need to use reduce.
Something
it's actually
like
much simpler than that. But I have a code pen that I had. I've been actually keeping of a few code pens of these questions I've been asked to.
So I think
to help me study.
I think that one I could do it.
You could. You totally could do it once you see it.
Well, but I think that my first implementation, it probably wouldn't be the best. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I probably would approach it the way that I mentioned, and then I would probably look at it and I'd probably be like, oh, I could probably do this better. Because I do that a lot when I'm writing stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, I think we all do. And I think that's what you're supposed to do. And also in these interviews, they say it's more about how you're supposed to talk out loud and talk about your thought process and what you're doing, why you're doing it. Maybe collaborating with the interviewer, but they're also timed, and it's interesting because you feel like you have to get it, and you come up with sort of a brute force solution, and then you can sort of, if there's time left over, you come up with a more elegant solution. But the point is trying to come up with some sort of solution.
Here's the thing, Paul. Sorry? Though I think some people listening are just like, well, wait a minute, I'm applying for a web development position. Why am I being tested on algorithms? You know, is it because the like you have a more of a JavaScript and React bent maybe than a decent number of people? Is it because of the type of position that you were applying for just implicitly has more of that in it?
Yeah. So I've been recruited for and applying to like senior and lead front end developer positions right now, mostly in San Francisco.
And in some places, front end developer, senior front end developer means React.
Exactly.
Like well, literally
San Francisco.
Like literally that's what it means. But in other countries, in other parts of this country, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's the trick of understanding where you're applying and
right.
sort of the cultures around that.
Well, all right, let's keep going. Like what I'm curious about this other stack stuff, like what other pieces of the stack they wanted you to know. So what's next? Let's assume that I passed that one with flying colors, even though I didn't.
Right. And then there's a lot of discussion about your projects you've been working on at your current company, mm-hmm. challenges you faced and sort of technical issues that you've solved. That's mm-hmm. a lot of it.
Yeah.
For the full stack job, they wanted me to whiteboard an API mm-hmm. for a sports betting website.
Oh.
Where a person could place one or more bets on a team to either win or lose. So it's okay. like take Major League Baseball. You have what? Is it 32 teams? 30? I can't remember.
30.
Teams
30.
30. Yeah. Anyway, so you list out all the teams and then you have like check boxes by the ones you want to bet on. And it's like a shopping cart type thing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Select the ones you want to bet on and you, that's how I solved it. But they wanted you to not only define the actual endpoints and the data that would be returning from them, mm-hmm. but also sort of like a data model from the database. So
okay.
at the end of the day, when you get to, like, if you were to sit down to do that for a client, you have a couple hours to do it and it's actually fairly simple to document it.
Right.
But when you're on a whiteboard with, limited space.
Yeah.
Right. Someone watching you and right. like critiquing everything you do.
Right.
It's like,
right.
oh shit. And also the other thing too, is like, if you're like me, you haven't been, you don't really interview that much. Actually, this is the first time I've really had to go through interviews like this, which is right. interesting too. In 20 plus years of my career. Once you get into it, it's not that bad. It's annoying, but it's not that bad. But it's also a weird way to, I think, measure people and what they can do. Because it's sort of like you have a limited amount of time, which, how do you figure out what someone can do in an hour for each? Well, this was a 4-hour onsite, so 4 different hour chunks.
So most of this so far, Paulo, though, I mean, most of it sounds, other than the database model, most mm-hmm. of it sounds not really full stack-ish, more right. front end. Mm-hmm. So what else are they asking you to do? And I get what you're saying, like, it's a high pressure environment when you're asked to get up there and perform, and you're essentially just thrown up on stage and told to dance. That's yeah. basically what it is,
Exactly.
Right. But what else have
the
we
more
got?
You do it, the more you do it, the easier it gets. But sure. So then in this recent onsite I did, it was 9:15 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, come on.
I talked to, I think, almost 25 people.
Are you compensated for this?
They paid for a hotel and flight and that okay. sort of thing.
I mean, that's something anyway, but...
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, it was I've also never... The worst onsite I've ever been through was like 4 hours
right.
tops.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of talking with the design and marketing and product folks. And then mm-hmm. there was 3 code pairing challenges.
Okay.
Which were actually fairly simple. They were building out... One was building out like a words with friends game in JavaScript. Just like a simple, like, here's this array of characters, spit it out. And then when you click on a character, move it to another location on the screen and erase it from the board.
And we're using...
But you only have 45 minutes to do this.
Were you using vanilla JS? Were you using React? Or
it's all vanilla JavaScript. If it was React, it would have been really easy.
I was going to say, yeah. Okay.
And that's also the other thing too, is like, since I've been in React land for so long, right. just trying to grind and remember DOM manipulation in JavaScript.
Can you Google?
You're allowed to Google, but you also only have 45 minutes to do it.
Right. Well, that's fine.
You're also...
Yeah, let's be honest. Like, I mean, everyone, when they're developing stuff these days, like, it's Google-driven development. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
It just is. I know people from super experienced people to newcomers, like, obviously there'll be some things that you don't need to Google every line, but yeah. everyone is doing it in terms of the development part of it,
And I will say that their process was much more humane, in that it's like they're telling you that you're in a real world situation, use Google or
right.
whatever you have. But the problem is they're having you code in CodePen.
Hmm.
And for some reason, the autocomplete has been turned off.
No, that's a yeah. bummer.
So that's like, oh my God, what's going on? So if you've ever tried, so in the last how many years have we had linters and VS right. Code and Atom right. and that autocomplete for you? That adds sort of another like, oh God. And especially like, I'm one of those people that I hate typing in front of other people. So I'm right. already, yeah.
Sure, sure.
like a monkey smashing the keyboard. But anyway, so So in addition to talking to like 20 plus people, you have these three coding challenges. One was actually, another one was really simple. It was like a job card with a, when you mouse over it, one of the left or the right side of the card would like fade into green. When you clicked on it, a modal would sort of slide down within the card.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually not that hard, but it's also, again, timed with people next to you taking notes while you're doing it. You're like, wait, did I just screw something up?
Yeah, and you're paranoid about making mistakes, and what does that say? And it's not and that. Is it because you're on the West Coast and the talent out there, there's such a hard push for, you know, people that are the type of people that get hired by Google or by Facebook? Is it just, do you think it's also where you live, or do you think this is everywhere? I you know, I'm in Boston, which is not an uncompetitive market, but I feel like it's not quite at that level.
I think it's just a symptom of the location because, and especially so for the role I was interviewing for, yeah, you needed strong JavaScript skills, but it was also more working with design, product, and marketing folks as a sort of senior level front end engineer. But like when you're building landing pages for their product and not working in the sort of dashboard area of their product, it's stuff that you we all do every day without a problem.
Totally. Yeah.
So the way they interview for it was really interesting because it was the coding challenges were definitely kind of related, but also you also don't know how much weight they put on this. I'm just waiting to hear back on that.
Right. Yeah. And were you finding that they were also testing you on the soft skills on working with marketing and business owners to get requirements and understand and raise concerns about an interface?
Yeah. The whole point of those pairing things is to like, you talk through your thought process. Process, what you're doing, how you're doing it, how you know what, how you can probably optimize it. It's so, all like, and at the end of the day, it's all fairly straightforward. But it's the pressure is really weird.
Yeah,
and of course you get there and nothing's set up correctly, and so you waste 10 minutes getting everything set up. You have 45 minutes total to do it. So there, right. You know, you're already wasting time, and so you don't know if that's being counted against you. Maybe they do that on purpose just to like rattle you. I don't know. But so what's one of those things that if you code vanilla JavaScript and HTML, CSS every day, multiple hours a day, the questions aren't that, probably not that difficult, and probably something you've seen a million times.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's good. But also when you're someone that was like, you know, had a full-time job and family and you don't get a ton of time to practice, it also, I can see it being very, very stressful.
Well, also as you, in your normal work job, you don't have people judging you. You know, in terms of like, you know, can you do this thing, you know? But so, right, exactly. When you're doing this pair programming, I'm sure part of it is that they're kind of looking at your psychology as well on how well you pair with the other people. So like probably a bad thing to do would be to yell at the other person and say, no, don't use tabs, use spaces. Like, how?
Yeah.
or get into an argument over formatting with them or something. That would probably be bad, right? That'd be a bad sign.
Exactly. But that's the other thing too, with CodePen, with all the formatting stuff turned off.
Yeah. Right.
You can't get even like, you actually have to pay attention to like adding curly braces and commas and semicolons and stuff.
That'd be funny if you walked in there and you determined immediately you didn't want the job, and then you decided to just get into a pedantic argument over tabs versus spaces. You would become legend. Like, they would talk about you for years.
That would be hilarious. Yeah.
So this is, I mean, a confession to make, Paulo. I have never interviewed for a job that I'm looking for. Never. Like, not even once.
That's awesome.
But I have been on the other side where I have interviewed people for positions to work for me. And I'll tell you what, like, at least from my position, and, you know, this has always been in the context of a smaller company, not in the context of like a huge company with thousands of employees. So, you know, my opinion is going to be different on this, but I've always found that when you're hiring someone, it's obviously got to be someone with, you know, that is a reasonable person. Right. That you're going to be able to work with, and they've got a decent personality, because that's important. You know, that's equally as important, I think, in a lot of cases as their hard skills in terms of, you know, coding or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's great to get someone that, you know, can hit the ground running doing a thing, especially if you need a thing. Right. Like if someone you're applying for a position that was vacated where they need a React developer to work on this thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. OK, it's great that you hit the ground running with being able to do React development. But the thing that I have always found to be more important is, can you learn? because especially in this business, the tools change, the languages change, the technology changes, like all of this stuff changes all the time. And are you able to pick up new stuff quickly and easily? And not just are you able, like are you willing? Because I've known a number of people that just get stuck in a box and they don't want to learn anything new. And if you hire that person, you know, I mean, it's great if their role never changes, then they're fine. But if not, that's like hiring an anchor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the whole one of the most intriguing parts of the whole process that I've never experienced, because this is the first time in 20 years I've really had to go through a gauntlet of real interviews. Like when I interviewed with IDEO, I was already contracting with them and they asked me to throw my hat in the ring. And the interview process was like, hey, we like you. We're going to have you talk to 15 people over 10 days, over 10 weeks or whatever. It took a long time for knowing they wanted to hire me. But anyways, it was like, and then before that, when I was, I worked at a startup in Emeryville, Bay Area, a buddy of mine became the director of marketing and it's like, hey, do you want to join the team? I'm like, okay, sure. So it was like talking to the other people on the team was just a formality. People already knew that I had some technical chops
and
I've always been successful. And then when I was, of course, running my studio for how many years? Almost 20. It's, you know, people hire me based on my past experience and projects. And it's weird being in a position where that stuff is kind of thrown out the window.
Or
it feels like it is, because getting told that you're not full stack enough. Also, that was my first on-site sort of ever that I'd gone through. And I was just, you know, starting to look and
I want
to
know more
holidays.
I want to know more. What part were you not full stack enough? Like what
did
they
need? Because I didn't get the algorithm the first time.
Which one?
It took me the range of sequential numbers.
But that's not really like full stack-ish.
Well, that's the thing. It took me a good 10 minutes of looking at the screen and like, oh, okay. And working on the problem. The guy that was interviewing me was actually the person who was responsible for their whole matching algorithm and their app. I'm like talking to this like master's level, PhD level algorithms dude who gave me, which is at the end of the day was a fairly simple algorithm. But since when you've never been in that position, and that I wasn't even grinding on sites like LeetCode, and FreeCodeCamp actually has a lot of good algorithm questions that you can practice with. But that was before I knew that was a thing, because they said that nothing like that would be part of the interview process, because I knew someone at the company too.
But here's the thing, Paulo, about development and algorithms and all that stuff. All of them are simple, or most of them, not all of them, but most of them are simple once you've done it. You know what I mean?
Once you've done it and once you see the patterns, it's not that difficult. Sometimes there's some that I've come across of like, you know, multiply all of the odd prime numbers to 4 trillion. Figuring out how to get to a prime number in an algorithm is, you just have to figure out how to do it. And once you figure that out, then you know how to solve the problem.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way to interview folks, because it throws out the whole like, well, I've done this for 20 years. I've had jobs and run a development studio for 20 years. I mean, like I've been still able to feed my family and put a roof over my head. So I kind of know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And I sort of feel like about me personally, and, you know, maybe I'm just completely wrong about it, but I sort of feel like if I was thrown into a situation to do many different things, like if I didn't know it, I feel fairly confident that I could figure it out.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And how do you measure that though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fun thing too, is the last interview I had this week, their algorithm question wasn't even an algorithm question.
Okay.
An iOS developer sat down with me and said, okay, we're going to build Keynote. Come up with classes to have like a presentation with slides in it.
Okay.
We're going to have methods to add and remove slides and blah, blah, blah.
All right.
So the funny thing with that is like, I haven't used JavaScript classes ever in my life in that context. But, you know, using the MDN docs, I was able to figure that whole thing out within the time limit of the 45 minutes we had. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, cool. I was able to figure this out on the fly. So that's a perfect example of, oh, I haven't done this in this context before. Let me try to figure it out. And I was able to figure it out. So,
now, were there any standards in terms of like what variant of JavaScript you were required to do this in?
No, I just did it in ES6 plus. So.
Because I know, like, you know, the classes are different and have changed over time depending on what you're using, you know?
Yeah, actually, before ES6, JavaScript didn't really have classes.
Right.
Classes are just a syntactic sugar over, what is it, the prototype? trying to remember the exact, it's been so long since I've even looked into it. ES6 classes are not, they're completely different from how you would do it. And
right. And aren't there changes in ES7 Plus and all that too with classes? I'm pretty sure there are.
In the context of this question, if there are, it didn't
wouldn't matter.
Apply. It was just basically coming up with two classes and then methods inside these classes to
because that's the weird manipulate the array. The weird tricky thing about doing some of this stuff in JavaScript is I'd be like, well, you know, what do I get to use? You know what I mean? Like, can I use fat arrow stuff? Like.
Right. Like, well, a lot of places will let you use the language you're most comfortable with. But since I'm interviewing in senior front end roles,
right,
they're all JavaScript, Node, that sort of thing. So, right.
Do you even tell them that you do PHP at all? Or is that just a smell that you don't want coming off you?
It's on my resume. But during these sort of pairing things, you don't have really time to even get into it.
Yeah.
So, but also they're just there to judge you on getting this component built, which is the other weird thing is because you have all these different people from across the team interviewing about certain things, but it never really connects the dots. And also doesn't really connect like someone who doesn't interview well, but who knows what they're doing and is a, you know, eager learner and can get things done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, well, at least in my context of like when I've interviewed people in the past, finding those diamonds in the rough. So one of the best people I've ever worked with bombed their interview, but there was something there that I was like, okay, I think she really knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give her a chance. And she ended up being one of the best people I've ever worked with. So
yeah. And that happens. I mean, some people just don't interview well, but it doesn't mean they couldn't do the job really well.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Here's,
or, you know, people haven't, you know, I've had, they don't have the context of, well, I've been in one job for 5 years. Sometimes, you know, if you're not used to that style of interview, maybe that person isn't comfortable or, you know, a little bit more nervous than a normal person. I don't know. It's an interesting sort of dichotomy of like measuring people from the company, but also being a person in a situation interviewing in an interview process you're not familiar with.
Right. So in addition to trying to look for, can people learn, you know, I used to use logic puzzles and, you know, occasionally there would be some code involved as well. The other thing I would look at is just like the really, you know, the more elite colleges, they don't just look at your GPA. They look at your extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing I used to look at was just like, okay, you know, that's cool that you worked at this place for a while, but, you know, what do you got going on your GitHub stuff?
Right.
Do you have any pet projects that you work on your own? Like what are your hobby projects? You know what I mean? Because that gives you an insight into the person and how motivated they are. You know what I mean? Like if you're so motivated that you have side projects where you're working on this stuff, then, I mean, you're definitely there.
Totally. Yeah. And in these cases, that seems to go out the window too.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that
or
seems...
at least when I mention it, no one really used that in the interview process. So
I mean,
we'll see how Tuesday went.
At least in my mind, that's a mistake, but who knows? I mean, maybe it's something they look at afterwards, and there are other ways that it could be looked at, right? You could look at the fact that someone is doing all this stuff on the side. You could look at that from the point of view of, well, are we going to be getting 100% of their time? You know, I mean, I guess there's a negative way you could look at that as well, but
yeah, but there's definitely balance. But also one of the things that one of the phone screens I had was with the head of design of this group, and he said, like, we can't find anyone for this position because it's so unique. All these companies hire front end engineers as they're hiring a back end engineer. They're not very creative. They can pass the algorithms and make a drop down menu. But what these people are looking for is someone who can actually work with people and take design and product and marketing requirements and make something beautiful from, you know, take what the designers built and make it beautiful. And there's definitely more to this job than that. But when he said that was a hard thing to hire for in San Francisco, I was like, that kind of blew me away because to me, as someone who's been working with in an agency capacity or building websites and working with designers and marketing and product folks, almost entire career, it seems second nature to me. So,
right.
Hopefully that helps me. So we'll see.
Well, what do you think, Patrick? Like, have you ever gone through this interview process? Like, how long has it been, Patrick, since you were actually sitting there interviewing for a job?
It's been a while. Yeah, I mean, I guess I've had quasi interviews, but not anything quite like this. I don't know. I made a transition at one point in my career from being more of a UX and user interface person, and then went straight into running my own business where I did development. So I feel like I've never been through a proper web dev interview.
Hmm.
That's not to say that I haven't had that sort of thing happen or anything like that in my time, but yeah, nothing quite like that.
But
I've had recruiters come at me and, you know, just talking about what are the things that they're looking for. Every single job that if ever a headhunter sends me a note, you know, React is on there, Node is on there.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, AWS sometimes, Java still for whatever reason. I'm like, do you mean JavaScript? Because I'm really hoping you mean JavaScript.
No. In the corporate world, Java is still, it's still a thing. Yeah. Or Kotlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't been out there interviewing for jobs. So I've been doing my own thing, but it's, I have interviewed other people. I'm usually the type of person that's looking more like, show me code you've written, show me how you worked out this issue. I don't know, for whatever reason, I feel it's not too constructive to put someone on the spot. Like if I need to put them on the spot and see if they can figure out, you know, FizzBuzz or something, like, I don't know. I guess that shows me if they've seen FizzBuzz before or if they can come up with it pretty quickly, but I don't know if they're,
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, is you get people that know how to interview. And you get people that know how to work with people and get the job done.
See, here's what interests me is that, Paulo, you're talking about the fact that you're applying for a front-end engineer job for the most part. A lot of these places you've been applying to. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard a word about HTML or CSS.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
That's the fun part about it. And also, it's extra fun for me because since I've been in React so long, and you know, even though JSX is HTML sort of like, I still took time to like, okay, I'm going to build a landing page just so I can remember how to do it with just plain CSS and CSS properties and semantic HTML just to remember how to do it. Mm. But it's actually funny how your brain also atrophies in certain areas when you've been doing something for so long.
Sure.
Working on a certain project for so long, but a lot of these companies expect you to do things their way without telling you what to prepare for. So that's always fun too. Mm.
But that just seems crazy to me. I think there are a lot of people listening who'd be like, you know, I'm a front end developer. Doesn't front end include HTML and CSS? Like what's going on? What happened to the world? You know?
Yeah, and at least in the components that I was building for this last on site, you definitely had to write this HTML and you had to write the CSS, but it was, I believe they were, I mean, it felt like they were judging you more on the actual JavaScript you output than the actual. Mm. You just needed to make it look like the little PNGs they sent you, which weren't, you know, designed super, it wasn't like a super complex, sophisticated design, which, you know.
They didn't care that you had semantic HTML. They didn't run it through WC3 validator, right? They didn't care about any of that. They just wanted to see the React part of it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and it wasn't React, it was vanilla JavaScript.
Vanilla JavaScript.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like one of those things that you can, this is one of those things why I think everyone needs to have some sort of JavaScript experience if they're going to try to get a job, because those folks that were really good at just HTML and CSS and translating design comps into beautiful HTML pages, I don't even know how they get jobs, because they're very valuable in the industry, especially people that know what they're doing. Because what I'm seeing is you have all these full stack back end developers who don't really care about the front end.
Right. Right.
And it was really, really interesting being interviewed by a whole team of folks who are like, we need someone with a skill. Wow, you can do X, Y, and Z. We're still stuck on Webpack 2 because no one wants to touch it.
Mm.
And then to be like, well, you're not full stack enough for that job. It's like, what? What are you talking about? This is everything that you need, I can do. So,
and that's,
I can still do database stuff and I can still work on your Rails app if you need to, but like, it doesn't sound like there's going to be time for that.
And that's where I would kind of get hung up, I think, Paulo. And that's why I said in the beginning that I thought that I would probably fail a lot of these interviews. But I also think that if they hired me, I would kick ass. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Right? Well, I think a lot of us that we know would be in that same boat.
Right. And it's not because, I mean, okay, so part of it, you can be like, all right, well, whatever, you're just being overconfident or whatever. But no, it's based on a history of me being able to be like, okay, I'm going to learn this thing. Mm-hmm. And I have been able to get really good at the thing that I wanted to learn.
Right.
And I know that that's different. You know, they may want someone where, you know, out of the box, we want you to be, you know, super awesome React developer or whatever. But again, that's, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I look for, and maybe it's because that's how I operate. But I look for people that can learn, because I know that what you're doing now is not what you're going to be doing in 2 or 3 years. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Even if it's the same language, it's probably not going to be the same API. Mm-hmm. Any challenges that is going to come up is new. I mean, I just care more that you can figure stuff out, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And also, you're not an asshole.
Right. Well, that disqualifies me. I'm all right. See you later.
Well, I think team fit and learning I think, get overlooked way more than they should be.
Right.
Or companies that claim that, you know, we're not looking for just like, can you sort a binary tree?
Right.
They miss out, I think, on a lot of.
But here's, okay, this is what drives me nuts, Paul. This is driving me nuts about this, is that how to sort a binary tree has been solved. Like, they're like, here's the algorithm. Just look it up, paste it in. If you want to understand it, that's great. But that's, we're good.
Hey, as long as you can memorize how to identify these problems and solve them,
right,
then you can get a job. But it is a very small slice of what a person can do. Can they learn? Are they easy to work with?
Mm-hmm.
You get what the funny part about this whole algorithm thing is, they claim that they use them to see what your thought process is like, since I guess legally they can't give you like IQ tests.
They can't.
It's a way to sort of understand your thought process and logical thinking and skills and that sort of thing.
Okay, so that part I'm down with. Like, if the goal is like, what I want to avoid in this process, or I would think people would want to avoid, is hiring someone that's really good at taking the test. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was going to get at. You can memorize the actual questions or the patterns in the questions.
Right.
And okay, maybe that makes you good at remembering things, but that still doesn't mean do you really know how to, you know, if you had to do this without ever looking at it. But at the same time, like, you don't know how to do it until you do it.
Right.
So it's a weird sort of like dichotomy of, we're testing you on logic, but it's logic that you've practiced hundreds of times if you're preparing for your interviews correctly. It's not really testing you. It's like, can you memorize things?
Right. And then, okay, you found someone who spent a bunch of time studying, you know, algorithms, is good at taking the tests and everything. But, you know, what happens when they're facing a real world challenge of something new that they've never seen before? I mean, then what?
Yeah, well, hopefully if they're smart enough to memorize algorithms, they can Google or talk to people, or I don't know. But it is really interesting to like go from like, hey, I've done all this pretty cool stuff that's, you know, solved problems and hit goals and increased revenue and increased growth metrics, but, you know, I guess I can't merge this linked list with another one. So,
well, you know, so like what Patrick was kind of talking about in terms of, he's in Boston and you're out in San Francisco. I think it probably is true that based on where you are, the jobs are much, much more JavaScript heavy and probably React heavy, you know, in terms of like what you need to know to do it.
Right.
But I also think that there are a lot of people who have been in this business a long time that they don't really realize how much the job market has shifted to some extent. So exactly. Like, if you had to put a percentage on the big three, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, what percentage do you think they're placing the emphasis on for each one?
Well, the places I've been talking to, it's all JavaScript. They don't care if it's like you're using spans to lay out a page. Just make them inline blocks or block level and you're fine.
Okay, so the places that you've interviewed at, like literally your interviews have been 100% JavaScript.
That's what it feels like they've been testing you on, yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't ask anything about HTML or CSS. Okay, now
the last one, you had to make these components. So you had to come up with the HTML and you had to style them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that is, it still didn't feel like that was what they were testing you on.
But here's the thing. So Patrick, let's say you are hiring someone to augment the work that you do, right? Mm-hmm. Where would you place the percentages in terms of like what their skills would need to be? Of only the big three, HTML, CSS, JavaScript.
HTML, CSS, JavaScript. I'd say, I care less than I used to even a few years ago about HTML.
Mm-hmm.
I care much more about their ability to, I guess, build out a page, work with libraries that I work with, like Tailwind and all that. So even then, is CSS as big a concern as it used to be? Most of it, we're using utility libraries.
Mm-hmm.
JavaScript is a big portion of it. I'd probably say 50% JavaScript, 30% CSS, 20% HTML.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think that's probably pretty reasonable. And like, sad but true, I don't even know if it's sad, but I think it's just a reality. Like, HTML has become a build target to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's this, it's this neutral format. It's a build target. You may or may not actually be writing anything in it, like, depending on what you're doing. Like, maybe you're using, like, Pug or Jade or one of those weird things, you know? And it's just this, like, neutral build target. And to some extent, I mean, JavaScript is sort of like that too, right? Because there are all these other languages that you could be using it to build target it to. But it's just interesting to me that, you know, you think front-end developer, or at least when I think front-end developer, I'm like, oh, you know, they do HTML, but it just, it doesn't seem like that's really what's going on anymore.
No, yeah.
Now,
which, I mean, you know, the industry is changing, the landscape is changing, but the emphasis on that and nothing else, at least so far, has been kind of eye-opening.
Right. Well, because if you were being hired just to do HTML and CSS, like to lay pages out or whatever it is that you're doing, none of those algorithm questions ever even enter the mix because there are no algorithms, right?
No, I mean, unless you're pulling stuff out of a database and it's a huge data set.
Right. Well,
you're working with a huge, like an API endpoint with a huge array, and you need to make it efficient. Mm-hmm. But again, yeah, that's like edge case.
Right.
The majority of the stuff on the front end is that's going to be done for you already.
Right. I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's very interesting because I think there are a lot of people that are in the, you know, freelance or work at small agency position. Like that's where they're at. And mm-hmm. the reality of what people are looking for when they're looking to hire, I think is out of sync.
Right.
You know, in terms of what they do.
Well, I was in that boat before I got to IDEO. If IDEO right. asked me these questions, I probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to work there. So,
right. right.
I was also really lucky that I was contracting with them and they could see like, oh, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
And he's also easy to work with. So maybe we want to hire him because apparently they were interviewing other people and I was told that it was really hard to find someone who would fit on the team. So.
And also you're kind of easy on the eyes. I mean, that doesn't hurt either. You know what I mean? Right.
I wouldn't agree with that, but thank you.
All right. So let's say we're going to interview you. I'm going to interview you, Paula. What do you think?
Oh, God.
You up for it?
Oh, boy.
You can try.
All right.
In here as your HR representative. I will keep an eye on things.
Do I get to use Google?
All right, Paulo. Welcome aboard. My name is Billy D. Joe Bob. I know you're here. You're here for the interview. Is that correct?
I don't think I think I'm in the wrong place.
Are you not here for the interview?
Yes, I am, sir.
All right. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I am. My name is Paulo. I used to work at IDEO.
Mm-hmm. IDEO? Is that an acronym?
It's actually the name of the company.
IDEO. Okay.
And they were a global design firm.
But they are
a global design firm.
But they capitalize it. Don't you only capitalize it if it's a acronym?
I believe so. But that's they're a bunch of designers who like to design things.
All right. Well, if they decide they want to, they can figure out some kind of acronym that they want to throw in there. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, I was on the, I was a tech lead and product engineer on their global marketing team.
Mm-hmm.
And the most notable, largest public project I worked on was IDEO.com, which is a, React app statically generated with Gatsby talking to a GraphQL backend.
Whoa. Hold on. Just a minute here. The only part of that conversation I understood was the .com part. Like I understand that's the internet part. What do you know about tanning buffalo hides?
I know you must kill the buffalo before you tan their hide.
You definitely want to do that. You try and tan the hide while it's still on the buffalo, you're going to end up in a world of hurt. Let me tell you, those things can mess you up and your car. Like you be done. So are you in the wrong place then? Because we're looking to hire someone to help us tan our buffalo hides. We don't need
I believe I opened the wrong portal to hell.
I think you're on the wrong Zoom meeting right now because this is not what we're looking for. All right. No, but seriously, anyway. I'll do it for real.
Okay.
So, Paulo, I'm looking to hire someone to join my fledgling agency. And, you know, I do a lot of development with some craft CMS stuff, but we also do quite a bit with custom sites. And I've been doing, you know, some work with Vue, a little bit with React and, you know, a whole bunch of other type of stuff. We're looking to bring someone on that can help out. Talk to me.
Okay. Well, it's your lucky day because I happen to love working with craft.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to love working with JavaScript.
All right.
I have a lot of, or I like to think I have a lot of React experience.
How do you feel about Webpack? Love it? Hate it?
I can tolerate it, but okay. I try to find tools that deal with it for me.
Okay.
And with my experience in React, working with Vue is relatively easy to sort of pick up as a needed and can be happy to do that. I've been looking forward to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also been working with designers and marketers and product folks my entire career. So I'm able to help them go from their idea to help through design to prototyping to, you know, production quality front end and back end and CMS implementations.
Now I've got a couple more questions for you, but my CTO Patrick Harrington, I want to see if he wants to chime in here and just get a better sense of you and what you're all about. So Patrick, you got anything that you would like to ask Paulo?
I was not told about this interview. It was not on my schedule today. I'm all set. I'm all set.
I have told you to check your emails, Patrick. All right. You know what, Paulo, I'm changing the course of the interview. Would you like to interview for a CTO position?
I actually would prefer to stick to a individual contributor role at the moment. So.
Really? So you would prefer to actually be building stuff rather than managing people for the most
part? There's a lot less work in the CTO role.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
It's not the last one I talked to. Mm-hmm. He wishes he could still code. I don't know. I'm still in that sort of phase where I love building stuff.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So maybe tech lead where I could get to still build stuff and lead a team.
Yep.
But eventually maybe an engineering manager or VP or CTO of engineering, whatever, would be fun. But
I think you have to enjoy being a manager if you want to do those things, because it's inevitable that if you're going to be in that role, that you're not going to be building stuff anymore. And most of your job is going to be about managing people, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And I do like the aspect of helping people succeed and
right.
And navigate their careers. And you can do that as a tech lead.
But the irony is, though, yeah, as a tech lead, you can definitely do that. But the irony is a lot of people in that, not everybody, all right, but a lot of people that end up being product managers or CTOs or, you know, whatever, it ends up being this weird inverted thing where the people that they're managing know way more than they do. You
know, right. They're there to shuttle people around, which is fine.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that I've talked to, especially on the product side, are developers who don't want to code anymore.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
is actually, you know, it helps that a product person has some engineering experience and understanding, so they can, I think, having the more holistic experience you have across the entire sort of stack, not just tech, but, you know, design, product, marketing, just gathering feedback from customers I think that makes you a better product manager and you develop better products.
Yeah, but I'm with you. Like, I regressed and went back to building stuff because I found that that's what makes me happy and that's what I like. But I think that you're right that someone with a technical background makes a much better product manager. Because they know how to build the stuff, even if they're not up on the latest stuff anymore. You know, I've also seen it the other way, where someone is just like a general manager type of person, and they're put in charge of a tech team, and it doesn't always work out the best. You know,
right? Really. You have to have someone that you trust as a lead of that team that can help you.
So, Paulo, the places that you're interviewing at, I mean, are they medium-sized companies, large companies? Like, how would you couch them, or is it a variety of places?
So far, I've had two on-site interviews. Mm-hmm. One was at a smaller startup. Another one was at a large fintech company in San Francisco.
Okay,
the startup was in San Francisco as well. And then I have a tech screen this upcoming Wednesday with another. I guess they're still considered a startup, but they're fairly large. They have offices around the country already. Mm. It's not WeWork, don't worry. And then I have, you know, I've been slowly getting into it because I don't want to get too much on my plate while I'm trying to sort of ramp up on learning how to interview again.
Right.
I just had a call yesterday for another sort of long-term craft contract, which would be kind of fun. And so, yeah, they're just slowly sort of trickling in. And I have these recruiters I've been talking with that like want to schedule 17 calls next week with companies.
Now, Paulo, is some of this kind of like after having been married for a lengthy amount of time, having to learn how to date again? I mean, at some point, it doesn't sound that fun. You know what I mean?
That's one of the reasons I'm actually starting to like talk to more people is just to get that experience again. Like, it is definitely like being married and then I guess trying to date again, which knock on wood, I don't have to do yet.
Right.
But it's
well, you could, but you won't be married very long.
This is true. It's a fascinating experience because it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's fascinating that what you have to do, the jumps you have to jump through. But it's also, it feels more like throwing as much shit against the wall. Until you see what sticks.
Right.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah, you got to get good at interviewing, right?
Right. It's also, that's basically the job. You have to know how to interview.
Yeah. And just like if you're back in the dating scene, you know, you got to get good at schmoozing and talking to people and, you know, doing that kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's also if you're, you know, going on Match.com or Tinder or whatever the kids are using these days. If you're just going out and just a random face among the crowd, I feel, Paolo, your biggest thing is, you know, you are a known entity in this community and you worked with IDEO. You must have contacts. Have you tried to reach out to people who know your reputation or, you know, can speak to your work already and might not put you through just the, your name and a resume and we're going to bring you in and just throw algorithms at you? Have you gone that route as well?
Yeah, I've reached out to a couple of people, but I haven't played that card entirely yet. I want to, while I still have savings, I want to try to do as much as my own to get the practice of interviewing. Mm-hmm. So one thing I learned with my previous job is I got really complacent and was basically just doing my job in my own tech stack for the 4.5 years. And
Paulo, use your network. Like that.
I know.
Totally do it. You know, it's just like, you know, if you were to go out dating again, to keep that analogy going, it would be much better than just like firing up Tinder or cruising the nightclubs. It would be much better if you had like a friend that knew you that had also had a friend that they thought you would get along with. You know?
That's how I've gotten all my previous jobs. So,
right.
So I might have got the contract at IDEO because I knew someone. And there's part of me right now, at least for the next few weeks or month, that I want to get that experience of interviewing anonymously, if that makes sense.
All right.
Because I've never done that before, and I have an opportunity to do that right now, just to sort of get that experience and just understanding all the different questions they're trying to ask you.
Right.
And then start, you know, bugging you guys for handouts.
I mean,
so I can feed my kid and afford my mortgage.
I mean, that was something that occurred to me when I wound down my company that I ran for decades, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm unhireable. You know what I mean? Because, well, I am, because who is going to judge like what I know and what I can do and what I can't do? You know what I mean? Right. There's no, you know what I mean?
And to work for SEO firms now at this point, which I don't know how you feel about that.
Anyway, but you know what I'm saying, and it's kind of similar, right? You know.
But the one thing I am going to say though is like in my last gig, since it was so focused on a certain tech stack, moving forward, you never know what's going to happen, and you never know how circumstances can change.
Right.
So be more prepared for like, okay, I've been at this place for X number of years. I've done everything I can. I'm going to look for something else. Just you want to sort of have a baseline sort of preparedness for going out in the world. So and being prepared for these interviews. So that's one of the reasons I'm trying to struggle through.
Makes sense.
Being one of those like numbers in the game of trying to get a job at these big tech companies just to get that experience. And also, I don't know if I got an offer at one of these big tech companies, if it would be worth staying at for the long term, too. So that's the other thing. Mm. So,
Paulo, are there some of these places that you've interviewed at that wouldn't, no matter how good or bad you did on the interview, that you already kind of knew that if they made you an offer, you would just be like, nah, you know, I'm good?
One place. Yeah. And that's why I've only gone on site twice. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to ramp up on all the tech screens and calls and that sort of thing. But one place, yeah, it would have been just knowing the culture and what they were looking for. They were looking for one thing, but knowing that they basically were going to hire someone else,
right?
Another skill set that doesn't even touch what they were trying to hire for. It would have been like, do I want to be that one person in this sea of Harvard computer science folks that are so tunnel visioned that would it be fun for me?
Right. But would you want to nail the interview so you got the job offer anyway? You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah. Right. I mean, getting the job offer up until this whole process, like I've never been denied a job.
Ooh.
And so the first one I went into, like, you're not technical enough. Like, oh, okay. Or whatever they said, full stack enough. I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting. So, but also that's another reason I want to go through this is to, I know this probably sounds sadistic, but get that thick skin and just to, because I've never had to go through that before. I've been very privileged.
The word you're looking for is masochistic. Sadistic. Well, I mean, depending on how bad you interview, it could be sadistic. Like if you're putting them through a horrible time, then, you know, potentially it could be. Well, this has been really interesting, Paulo, because I think it's you offer a really unique window into what it's like to interview at the web dev world. And I do think it's probably more skewed towards JavaScript and React than the industry as a whole. But I also mm-hmm. think that it is more skewed in that direction than a lot of people realize.
It's, well, I guess it also depends on the market you're hiring, you're looking right. To get a job in. But the one of the things that I wanted to get out of this sort of podcast was just to let people know that it is as bad as people think or right. say. And if you are looking to make a move, plan for it and start practicing as much as you can before you make that jump, because it can take, you know, this is like pretty much my first real month of looking for things.
Right.
And it was after the holidays. So, you know, I guess 2 weeks, but I, you know, I might have to like prepare to be like 2 or 3 months before I'm like, oh crap, I need to get something here pretty quickly. So,
Well, I'm going to make a move, Paulo. I'm going to make a move to wrap up the podcast. So that about wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. If you'd like to have every episode delivered to your favorite player, you can subscribe via RSS or find us on iTunes or Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, please review the show on iTunes. It's the best way to help others find the show. And you can also find us on Twitter at DevMode.fm. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Leave us a comment on the DevMode.fm website, where we can continue the conversation. For the DevMode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Patrick Harrington.
And thank you, Paulo Elias, for coming on and speaking your truth.
Thank you for having me. It was great. It was fun.
I stopped the podcast not only because we're at, you know, about the 1 hour mark, but also mm-hmm. I've been petting this dog like crazy for the last 10 minutes to try and stop her from like freaking out and making noise.
Yeah, I heard a shake there a little at the end there.
Because then I'm going to have to go edit it and it's going to drive me crazy. And my hand is actually getting tired like from doing this. So I'm just like, I have to end the episode. So there you go. All right. So I stopped that recording. I stopped.